to egress from the lunar module. Is there a delay, do you think, or...
Well, let's look at the flight plan and compare it. They are in the final preparations for egress. They have turned on the Pliss water, apparently. It looks to me as though they're right on schedule, Bill.
We would like very much to go to our VOA newsroom, if we have time, to get a brief summary of world news. That's a calculated risk, I suppose. We'll ask you to stand by, Rhett, and please let us know if there's any indication that he is about to move outside the Intrepid. Now, to the Voice of America newsroom, a summary of late world news.
Apollo 12 Commander Charles Conrad is about to become the third human being to walk on the moon. In just a few minutes, slightly behind schedule, astronaut Conrad will climb down from the lunar module Intrepid and leave his footprints on the moon's ocean of storms. Astronaut Alan Bean will follow in about 30 minutes. The two space flyers guided their lunar lander Intrepid to a perfect pinpoint landing on the western edge of the moon's ocean of storms, shortly before 7 hours Greenwich Mean Time. Commander Conrad called the flight descent and the precision landing amazing, fantastic, and outstanding. The touchdown point was said to be less than 350 kilometers from the precise, or rather meters, from the precise target area, the spot where America's Surveyor 3 spacecraft soft-landed almost 3 years ago. During the second moonwalk tomorrow morning, the moon explorers will walk to the Surveyor and retrieve several parts of the robot craft. During the first moonwalk today, the astronauts plan to televise their activities, take photographs, erect a United States flag, set up scientific experiments, and gather moon rocks. At an early morning news conference, space agency officials said, so far, the flight of Apollo 12 has been easier than the flight of Apollo 11. United States and Soviet representatives will meet for the second time tomorrow as preliminary talks continue on strategic arms limitations. The two sides met Tuesday at the U.S. Embassy in Helsinki. Tomorrow's meeting will be at the Soviet Embassy. The meetings are described as preliminary and exploratory to define the basis for future substantive negotiations. The negotiators earlier said there will be no comment on the meetings, but that statements will be issued when developments warrant. Japanese Premier Eisaku Sato will sit down with President Nixon later today to discuss a wide range of subjects important to the two countries. The return of Okinawa to Japan, the growing United States trade deficit with Japan, and maintenance of security forces in Asia are high on the agenda. The talks are expected to continue through Friday, when a joint communique will be issued. Premier Sato's departure for Washington provoked violent demonstrations by Japanese leftist radicals who oppose continued close security ties between Japan and the United States. Secretary of State William Rogers says the Nixon administration plans new moves in an effort to improve relations with Communist China. Appearing on a special television program, Mr. Rogers said, "The United States, among other things, wants to resume direct talks with Peking at the ambassadorial level." Such talks were held between 1955 and 1968 in Warsaw, but none has been held in almost 2 years. Secretary Rogers reaffirmed the United States' attitude of neutrality regarding the border disputes between the Soviet Union and Communist China. He expressed hope that the talks now underway between the two communist powers will lead to reduced tensions in the area. Earlier, Mr. Rogers said diplomatic contacts have been made with North Vietnam since the death of Ho Chi Minh in September, but he added it would be wrong to suggest that they have indicated any progress. The secretary gave that assessment after talking privately with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The committee chairman, Senator William Fulbright, said the stumbling block to a Vietnam settlement is creation of a government under which a free election could be held. Postmaster General Winton Blount, just back from a visit to Vietnam, said anti-war demonstrations in the United States prolong the war and result in killing American troops. Meanwhile, the Justice Department disclosed it is trying to determine if any leaders of last week's anti-war demonstrations in Washington should be prosecuted under the Federal Anti-Riot Act. There was some violence in connection with the generally peaceful march of 250,000 people. B-52 bombers pounded enemy positions near the Cambodian border, where South Vietnamese troops inflicted heavy North Vietnamese casualties in two recent clashes near the Bu Prang and Duc Lap Special Forces camps. The two camps have been under pressure from an estimated 5,000 North Vietnamese troops who moved into the Central Highlands region from Cambodian bases. And that is the news, Lou Rowland reporting.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. We are standing by for the beginning of their first moonwalk, their first EVA, when astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean will step out onto the surface of the moon and conduct their experiments, gather their geology collections for some 3.5 hours. At the moment, they seem to be running slightly behind schedule. Checking our flight plan, it would seem to be roughly between 20 to 30 minutes behind schedule. They have not yet put on their gloves, and I don't believe they've put the helmet on. They do have on their portable life support system, the PLIS. You'll hear that term very often today. Then, of course, they must depress the cabin, depressurize, that is, the cabin, before they are able to go outside. I believe we have time to retrace some of the events of the day. It's Wednesday here in the United States and in many other parts of the world. The landing on the moon came at 6 hours 54, Greenwich Mean Time. A very dramatic landing it was. Norm Guerin, perhaps you can describe that further and bring us our playback tape.
That's right. The Apollo 12 landing on the moon came shortly before 7 hours Greenwich Mean Time, and here's how it sounded as astronauts Gordon and Bean approached the moon's surface.
I think I see my crater. Hey, baby.
He's looking for his landmarks.
P-64, Pete. Pitching over.
P-64, pitching over. High gate.
Roger, copy P-64.
2,000 meters high, 5.9... I hope you can hear him. Right down the middle of the road.
I'll reset my watch.
Okay, Houston, go for landing.
Over one. I just want LCD to the right a little.
Roger.
40 degrees, LCD, Pete. 40
That's
degrees.
That's so fantastic, I can't believe it.
You're at 2,000 feet.
How far?
The boys on the ground do okay. 1,800 feet up, 39 degrees. You got 94 seconds of LPD time left.
Okay, I want to move forward a little bit.
2.5 minutes to go.
38 degrees, 36 degrees, you're 1,200 feet.
He recognizes all of the landmarks below him.
Down at 30. You're looking good.
That's
got 14% fuel.
Al's calling off the numbers to Pete.
Looks good out there, Dave. Looks good.
Looks good, babe. Looks good out
32
there,
32 degrees, you're at 800 feet.
800 feet.
33 degrees. You're at 680 feet, 33 degrees.
About 200 meters feet. Up.
Antenna's okay.
Thanks.
35 degrees, 530 feet, 530, 471, you are all right, 426,
I got it,
400, you're P-66, Pete.
P-66,
P-66,
down to pilot's
okay.
Low gate, rate
yeah,
of descent,
330 feet, coming down at 4, got 11%, just slows the gas,
slowing down, 150 meters up,
300 feet coming down at 5, Hey, look at that crater right where it's supposed to be.
Right where it was supposed to be.
257 feet coming down at 5. 240 coming down at 5. Hey, you're really maneuvering around.
Yeah.
A minute to go.
Come on down, Pete.
Okay.
10% fuel.
That's Bean calling off the numbers.
200 feet coming down at 3. Need to come on down. Okay.
Right on the mark.
190 feet.
30
come
meters.
On down, 180 feet. 9%, you're looking good. Gonna get some dust before long. 130 feet, 124 feet, Pete.
About to get some dust. 120
feet coming down at 6. You got 9%, 8%. You're looking okay. 96 feet coming down at 6. Slow down the descent rate. 86
straight up and down now.
Four. You're looking good.
Just 70 about.
70 feet. Looking real good.
30 seconds to
feet.
Go.
60 feet coming down at 3. 50 feet coming down. Watch for the dust. Up 46.
Low level.
42 feet coming down at 3.
About 15
down at
meters.
Okay. Start the clock. 42 feet coming down at 3. 40 coming down at 2. Looking good. Watch the dust.
He's moving around.
31, 32, 30 feet. Coming down at 2 feet. You got plenty of gas. Plenty of gas, dude. Hang in there.
30 seconds.
18 feet coming down at 2. He's got it made. Come on in there.
He's got it
24
made.
24 feet. Contact light.
Contact.
Roger. Copy contact.
Clock. Pro. Yeah, pro. Okay. Make sure I'm off.
Okay.
I'll cycle these valves. You got your descent engine command override off.
Yep. Intrepid's on the moon.
Cycle the main shutoff valve. Okay. Thought seat closed. You get both ready for it, Dave.
On the surface.
Landing. Hey, outstanding, man. After arm on. Beautiful. He gets set. Fire.
They're going through the...
Okay, I'll smoke over the acid.
Turning off all of the equipment, making sure the ascent
okay.
stage is ready should they need to abort.
Okay,
they're sitting on the surface.
Line. Don't worry about it. Ascent expendables look good. H2O.
Oxygen, H2O looks good. Expendables look
okay,
good.
Okay, we're in hot shape, Houston. We're in real good shape.
Roger,
okay,
me.
Engine stop, you pushed it. Yep, pro. Both control, both auto. Both auto.
Pete says we're in hot shape,
off.
Houston.
Engine arm off. I got the 413 in and cycle the Parker valve.
Okay.
Thruster ISO valves are done. Main shutoff's done. You've bent it. Master arm on. Master arm, you turned it off. Master arm is off. Okay. Just watch the systems and stand by. Okay. Hey. Man, oh man, Houston. I'll tell you, I think we're in a place that's a lot dustier than Neil's. A good thing we had a simulator, because that was an IFR landing.
And that was the recording of the Apollo 12 landing on the moon, which came shortly before 7 hours Greenwich Mean Time.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. We're standing by now for the first EVA, extravehicular activity, or the first moonwalk for Apollo 12. Astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean are busy making preparations, getting their suits ready, working with their helmets. We understand that there is a problem of some moisture inside one of the helmets. Let's get a status report now from the Manned Spacecraft Center and correspondent Rhett Turner.
We're monitoring the conversation going on inside Intrepid as Pete Conrad has his helmet on now. Al gently lowered this plastic device over his head and... they are buttoning it up, so they've got to make sure the suits, that the atmosphere, the air flowing through the suits, working properly. They also, each of them also wears a liquid-cooled garment. This is...
Seconds to LOS.
Yankee Clipper is going out of contact around the moon in about 30 seconds. Dick Gordon says, okay, Houston, I'll see you next pass. On this pass, of course, Yankee Clipper with Dick Gordon aboard spotted both the Intrepid on the surface of the moon and right behind it, right where it's supposed to be, in a gentle crater there, is Surveyor 3, which has been there waiting for this rendezvous for 2.5 years. Inside Intrepid, the astronauts are running some 20 to 30 minutes behind their schedule in donning. That's Pete putting on his gloves now. Says, I'm having trouble getting my fingers down in them.
Was there anything further on the moisture inside the...
No, haven't heard anything else,
anything
Bill.
Further?
Nothing else on moisture. Maybe Pete's a little excited. Maybe he's perspiring just
that
a
That might
bit.
Be.
Rhett Turner, will the egress procedure be similar to that of Apollo 11 with Commander Conrad pulling the lanyard to deploy the TV?
Let me check your lock. Check mine.
The same sort of timeline will be followed. Pete will go out first, and he will climb down on the ladder of the lunar module, and he has what is called a D-ring to his left. He will reach over and pull this lanyard. Cables run across one of the quadrants of the LEM and down to what is called the MESA, the Modular Equipment Stowage Assembly. When he pulls this release cable, the mesa flops open, the 1/6 gravity of the moon will help, and there are some springs to pop it out, and it drops down, and the color television camera is mounted on that. And I hope maybe they have pointed it a little better than we were able to get accomplished on Neil's flight, so that we may see Pete drop all the way to the surface of the ground. This is difficult to do because you don't know how much these struts are going to compress when the lunar module touches down. But when Pete does go out, before he climbs to the surface, he will open up this MESA device, and the television camera is to be turned on, and we should get live transmissions and live pictures of that.
Well, that MESA compartment, Rhett, also holds the ALSEP package.
The ALSEP is stored in another quadrant around on the back side of the lunar module. They have to go out and walk around.
Yes.
One quadrant houses the nuclear generator, and then another quadrant behind the LAM houses all of the ALSEP package.
Rhett Turner, to your knowledge, has the MESA been modified to accommodate new tools for this mission, new rock boxes or anything of that sort?
The MESA is almost the same as it was before, with two rock boxes, tools to be used for picking up rocks, one of the rock boxes or sample return containers has this little tinfoil window shade device for measuring the solar wind. There are some of these core samplers in the rock box and tool area. These will be stored inside one of the rock boxes. The MESA is just about exactly the same as on the Apollo 11 flight. Don Beatty's nodding his head in agreement here.
It serves as a workbench, too, at times.
That's right.
This was one area of the MESA that was modified slightly. They did have a little problem on the MESA of Apollo 11 closing the rock boxes, and there has been a slight modification on that to give them a little more firmer footing when they put the rock boxes down. But essentially, Rhett is correct. There have been very few changes to the MESA.
They lower it down a bit so they can get more traction in sealing the...
No, they just beefed it up a little bit so that it wouldn't give so much when they were pushing down to close the seal on the rock boxes. This is sometimes a rather difficult procedure to get enough purchase on the lid to close the seal.
Well, the first thing that Conrad will do, I suppose, is to try to become familiar with the lunar surface, a kind of familiarization before he actually begins any experiments, will he not?
He has a considerable period of time that he spends there just looking around and getting his footing. I think Pete's going to have a little harder time hopping back up to that first step on the ladder. Pete is a short little guy, and in 1/6 G, I'm sure he can bound up. And Chris Kraft predicted that some of these guys are going to take one leap off the surface of the moon and land on the front porch up at the hatch. And the way these two men have been acting, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't.
Well, in the simulators here at Houston, they've actually done that, where we've simulated the 1/6 G. Some of them can, in fact, jump in one jump from the surface all the way up to the porch.
To the hatch itself. That's about 3 or 4 meters off the ground.
Based on Dick Gordon's report, we now believe Intrepid to be on the northwest rim of the Surveyor crater, approximately 600 feet from the Surveyor.
Back off into your corner. Okay.
Well, there's a new figure from Mission Control. That was Jack Riley, who's on duty with us now as the voice of Apollo Control. According to Yankee Clipper's estimate, some 600 feet on the shoulder of the what is called the snowman. Don, we haven't described the snowman. I think maybe we should at least acquaint our listeners with that, because I'm sure Pete and Al are going to be talking about it. When they are approaching this particular little group of craters from the west, in looking toward the landing site, you see two craters slightly spread. These are the feet. Then there's another small crater, which could be the trunk of a snowman. If you made big snowballs and pile them one on top of another in a front yard, as we all did as children who live in the snowy areas, this next crater would be the trunk. And then the shoulder area, the chest and shoulder area, which is a large crater, would be what is called the Surveyor crater. And then there's one more crater just beyond that to the west, which is smaller and could easily be the head And in training for the flight, this particular alignment of five craters appeared very similar to a snowman, and that's why they've come to call it that. Does that sound accurate to you?
That's exactly how it came to be called, the snowman.
And it appears that the Intrepid is on the left shoulder of the snowman. This would be the north side of the Surveyor crater, just between the chest and the head. And I hope that makes sense to our listeners all around the world, and that you may picture with us in word, from this word picture, what the map of the moon looks like at this point where the astronauts have touched down.
They're about 182 meters then from the crater on that northwest rim.
Well, we had it down to about 200 meters, didn't we?
Pretty close.
Don Beatty, what other significant land tracking marks were used to guide the astronauts to this spot?
Well, and this approach was a little bit different than Apollo 11. He actually flew this in the mode that's called eyeballs out, and he was facing away from the moon until almost the last maneuver, so he was not tracking landmarks on his approach quite the way that we were expecting Armstrong to do it. Of course, Armstrong had a little trouble using his landmarks because of the alarms, which were distracting him during the approach phase, but actually Pete did not have a lot of visual cues to the landing site before he pitched over and had the actual landing site in view. This happens during just the last few minutes of the power descent phase.
This could be compared to making an instrument approach with an airplane versus a visual approach to airplane pilot, in airplane pilot's terminology, IFR rather than VFR.
And, of course, he mentioned that he was IFR the last 100 feet or so because of all the dust he was kicking up.
Yeah. In fact, Pete himself used the phrase, boy, that was an IFR landing. In fact, the reason he moved to the position at which he touched down was because of the dust storm, the dust area that was being blown up. So apparently this was a much dustier and much more loose area where they have finally touched down on the surface. Those final seconds in real time with Pete with his hand on the controller flying manually were dictated. The things that dictated where he landed were strictly the conditions of the area into which he touched down. And this dust storm is what really put him over there on the shoulder of the snowman. Actually, he's less than 50 meters from Pete's Park.
Which
no,
is?
Wait. Well, I see Pete's Park was down near the trunk of the snowman, so he's over beyond the Surveyor crater, just about 50 meters from the second site selected just last week.
Well, they've been on the surface of the moon now about 4 hours and 29 minutes. We're about 30 minutes late in beginning this first moonwalk with astronauts Conrad and Bean.
We're listening to them continuing to check out the portable life support systems aboard. Al Bean just made a comment about...
They got an O flag, a tone on, and we're going to check your CP configuration while we wait.
When he says we got an O flag, he's talking about one of the small instruments on the
field. I think we both turn around at the same time.
Okay, go ahead, check yours, and I'll check mine.
Pete says, I don't think we can both turn around at the same time in here. They're rather bulky when they have them mounted on their backs. The flag would be one of the small indicator devices on the portable life support system that the other astronaut can see.
It's clear enough.
Question about how something is doing, he says, clearing up. Maybe that was the moisture that...
Oh, boy, that suit was really clamped down around me.
The suit is really clamping down around me. That comment. It's pressurizing. I believe that was Pete making the comment. He's the first to be pressurized, to be ready to go.
Yeah. CDs look pretty good. Okay, let me check mine.
Al said, okay, let me check mine.
And I'm sitting at 3.8.
Pete says I'm sitting at 3/8.
3.8.
The
pressure
inside
the suit. 3.8.
Okay,
look. In saying that, he left a point out of his conversation. I'm sitting at 3.8 pounds per square inch pressure.
Coming on up.
Al Bean's pressure coming on up. Obviously, he now has his helmet on and gloves. Was a little unclear. Pete was saying something. Now we're listening to the astronauts inside their portable life support systems. That means that their transmissions are coming from within their helmets, and they are somewhat degraded from what they were before they put the helmets on.
Those rocks have been waiting 4.5 billion years for us to come grab them.
Conrad says those rocks have been waiting for 4.5 billion years for us to come grab them. Bean says, let's go get them.
Okay,
Conrad says, we've got to put the ALSEP out first.
We're still standing by, waiting for the moonwalk to begin. Pete Conrad and Alan Bean still checking out their suits, their helmets, their gloves, the portable life support system, the many things that must be checked before they leave the Intrepid.
He's asking, are you, we go for EVA?
Stand by, Intrepid. We'll be right with you.
Ed Gibson, the capsule communicator, says he will be right with you. We're getting some noise on the circuit now.
Intrepid, you're go for EVA.
Go for EVA.
Cabin reset valve closed. Okay, just a second.
Now, while they're inside these plisses, we're going to have a continually degraded signal until they get outside. We found that as they move around, they'll bump the antennas for the VHF transmitters. They'll bump them on top of the... in fact, this noise you hear is very likely that one of those antennas bumping around and shorting out on the inside of the limb, and it somewhat degrades the signal. When Pete asked Mission Control, are you go for EVA, and Mission Control said, stand by, Pete's response was, you ought to be spring-loaded down there to give us an answer. Oh, boy, we're really getting a buzz now from the signal. That's almost unintelligible to read what they're saying through that. Why don't we stand by a moment and until they get all of that cleared up?
In the way here. Why don't you, Whitless, you're going to tire yourself out doing
it. Rhett Turner?
They're going through the procedures, Bill. That's a little hard to broadcast, so I'll stand by and listen.
We'll ask you to stand by. We're waiting, of course, for astronaut Pete Conrad, the commander, to be the first, the third man, really, in history to step out onto the surface of the moon. That should be coming very soon. In the meantime, from our Voice of America newsroom, a brief summary of late world news.
The Apollo moon exploring astronauts are about to leave the landing vehicle Intrepid to go out on the moon's surface. Their departure from the Intrepid has been delayed while they make some further adjustments to their moonwalking suits. Overhead, astronaut Richard Gordon in the Apollo mothercraft reports that he sighted the Intrepid sitting on the edge of a crater, and he said he can also see the surveyor craft off to the side. Moon explorers Charles Conrad and Alan Bean are to spend about 3.5 hours outside the Intrepid on their first moonwalk, and tomorrow they'll spend another 3.5 hours outside. They have several experiments to set up, several tasks to perform, and they will inspect the nearby Surveyor spacecraft that landed on the moon nearly 3 years ago. The Voice of America will bring you continuous coverage of the entire period that the astronauts are on the moon and periodic reportage on the remainder of the moon mission. Arms limitation talks resumed in Helsinki tomorrow between the United States and the Soviet Union. The negotiators met yesterday at the U.S. Embassy. Japanese Premier Eisaku Sato and President Nixon opened talks in Washington today on the return of Okinawa and other issues. A joint communique is expected on Friday. American bombers pounded enemy positions near the Cambodian border, where South Vietnamese forces inflicted heavy North Vietnamese casualties in two recent clashes. Secretary of State William Rogers says diplomatic contacts have been made with North Vietnam since Ho Chi Minh's death, but nothing apparently worked out. The secretary also says the Nixon administration plans further efforts to improve relations with Communist China. The Egyptian National Assembly has accused the United States of being directly responsible for the Middle East crisis. And four African and Asian countries have asked for a United Nations investigation into alleged Israeli mistreatment of Arabs in occupied areas. As many as 20 million Italian workers are on a 24-hour strike to protest government housing policies, while French farmers demonstrated in several towns against government agriculture policies. Joseph Kennedy, father of the late President John Kennedy, died of a heart attack in his Massachusetts home at age 81. And President Nixon has asked Congress for new powers to cut foreign trade tariffs in an effort to improve United States competition in world markets. And that is the news in brief, Lou Rowland reporting.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. We're standing by now for Apollo 12's first moonwalk to begin. It is running about 30 minutes behind the flight plan. Astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean should be leaving the spacecraft very soon. Of course, the spacecraft commander Pete Conrad will go out first. We'll make the first step onto the lunar surface. We'll go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston and ask correspondent Rhett Turner for a status report. Let's go back to Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center.
Okay, we're still listening to Pete as he's... The hatch has begun... The cabin is now being depressed. So we're now 3 minutes into the EVA. The actual extravehicular activity begins when the astronauts have to rely wholly on the portable life support systems on their backs. They began depressurizing the interior of the spacecraft 3 minutes ago, so that's the beginning of this three-hour period of EVA. Now we're listening to Pete Conrad and Al Bean continuing to watch the pressurizing system in the spacecraft as it goes down. It takes several minutes, 8 to 10 minutes, for it to completely depressurize before they can open the hatch. And then Pete will scramble out. Let's listen to this communication. It sounds pretty good.
You have an ascent prep light, a preamp, and an ECS. Play exactly what we've got. And an H2O subcomponent light on. Okay. Lighting enunciator numeric dim.
That's Pete Conrad.
PD-16 TV closed. All right? See that? I'm going to turn around. Okay.
Al Bean acknowledging all of those comments. Pete's reading off HTO. Water system was okay, and just before that, he had one other confirmation of the system. More checklist, really.
A minute. I know you're going to have to turn around and get in the corner. Okay. And bend over and I'll get your antenna up. All right? Easy. It does? Okay. Bend over.
Hatch open 115-1037.
They have opened the hatch, apparently.
My antenna up. Okay.
They have got the hatch open. Boy, they blew that thing in a hurry.
They're moving more quickly now.
Mission control has turned off the...
We will be... Okay.
The actual depressurization seemed to have gone a lot faster than Apollo 11.
Oh, boy, that was only 2 minutes.
Those lighting enunciators to dim. Okay, you go back into your corner so I can turn around.
All right. Al's got to back into the back part of the lunar module so Pete can turn around. With these backpacks on, it's rather constricted inside the vehicle.
Okay.
Pete will get down on his hands and knees and back out. Feet first.
Finding it the other way around the airplane. I walk flat-footed here. I'm standing on my toes all the time. A pretty good vacuum. Wonder how long it's going to take this spoiler to get going.
He says this is a pretty good vacuum. I wonder how long it's going to take to spoil it as you go along. And that comment, that was Conrad, I believe. We're hearing this live. There was a switch there.
Have this cool air and he'll be okay.
That's Al Bean's voice.
There goes the hatch. Uh-oh. Let's get that baby. I did it.
There goes the hatch. Uh-oh, let's get that baby.
Yeah, I know. Okay, but keep it closed. Okay, let's pull it all the way open.
Let's pull it all the way open. Comment from Bean. They quickly and efficiently depressurized the spacecraft. I have no doubt that this procedure was highly advocated by flight planners because the quicker they can depressurize the cabin and open it, the more time there is on these portable life support systems. That's insurance.
Hey, my boiler's on the line. Yeah, man, coming up too. Feels real good. Yep. Let's see, I can go to...
That's Bean.
Intermediate flow, huh? Yep,
I think he's talking about water flow in his suit.
It's an intermediate. I'm ready to go over the sill. Like
Pete says he's ready to go over the sill.
Hey, come on, dude. The boy's yelling, see the Mesa. Mobility, CG, step down and recharge motion, walking balance, and all that good stuff.
He's looking at his checklist.
Pull the door all the way back. They hand you something.
He's reading off from his checklist, deploy the LEC and the Mesa, the first thing he does. The LEC is a clothesline device for hauling equipment back and forth up into the hatch.
He's
he says he feels this, gets the feeling he's stuck on something. He's backing out.
Now you're in good shape. Okay, go straight down from where you are. Okay.
Bean's telling Pete to go straight down.
Good,
and back out.
Good. Okay. Got to feel there a little more.
Al says you've got to get down a little more. That's why they need a small platform outside the hatch called the front porch.
You're okay.
It has to be a little space for Pete to move out onto before he can then really orient himself and descend the ladder.
You're headed out the door.
Al says you're headed out the door. First thing Pete will do will be bring out the clothesline device with him.
Okay. Okay, I'm at the porch.
Pete says he's on the porch. He's outside.
Okay, let me pull up. He's
going to pull on the...
Deploy the Mesa.
Going to deploy the Mesa. He's going to pull that ring, and then Al can turn the camera on.
While you're doing that, let me get the LEC ready for you.
Having a little trouble pulling the handle of the lanyard on the Mesa.
Handles in there like something I never saw before. How's the lock doing? Is it easy to get? Was it easy to get the lock out?
Yeah.
No, that's better. I couldn't get the handle out of the deal. I just pulled the cable and raised it down. Okay. There you go.
He's pulled the cable. The Mesa is flopped down.
TV starting to come in.
Hey, I'll tell you where we're parked next to.
As soon as...
We're
about 25 feet in front of the surveyor crater. It's
now
water.
Pete knows
I
where
got,
it is.
I bet you when I get down to the bottom of the ladder, I can see the surveyor. Hmm. All right, here you go. You want to take this with you, Pete?
Sounds good, Pete, just like you wanted.
Just swing her out here. That's right.
He's going to see it.
Okay, now hold it there just a second, Pete, okay? One second.
The picture we're getting looks quite similar to Apollo 11.
Do you have any TV, Houston?
Yes, we do.
Roger,
TV.
We've got a TV.
We can't quite see Pete on that ladder
Conrad
yet.
No, Conrad is yet.
No, I'm at the top of the ladder.
And he's small.
Okay, now look, this thing is all the way out of the back. How do you want me to do it? This way?
Keep going.
Huh?
Adios.
No, but this thing isn't all the way out of the...
That's okay.
Here, let me have this end of it.
He's trying to get the...
They come back up the ladder.
Conveyor device.
Attaboy. Which end is that?
We're going to see
end
Pete on television coming down the ladder
here
in a moment.
Here we go. Look at that stuff go.
He tossed out, I believe, part
go.
Of that clothesline.
Look at that stuff,
it really sailed out. In 1/6 gravity, it really sailed out. We could see something on the television as he threw it out. The conveyor is dangling into the picture.
That's the lunar equipment conveyor swinging in the screen there.
The LEC, the lunar equipment conveyor.
What?
Clothesline pulley device.
I can't figure out kind of a snarl I got here.
Pete says he has a snarl in that line. Coming back to Earth, a color television picture. We can see a gold strut, which is one of the legs on the land.
The color at this point definitely enhances the picture, I think. It makes the structure much more clear.
What's the problem? An LEC came out of the bag in three pieces, and she would win. Well, imagine, I picked the wrong piece.
You want me to pull it back in and throw you in?
No, that's not the problem.
There's no trouble.
I got it right now. Leanne, they aren't kibbling. They think they get dusty.
The LEC was snarled up when he took it out of the bag. He says it got quite dusty.
It must have dragged already on the surface one time.
We can see it dangling. We can see Pete now coming down the ladder. There's a foot, a big covered foot in view. Boy, is that a good-looking sight, that limb, says Pete.
You're coming into the picture now, Pete.
That's Ed Gibson, capsule communicator.
Okay, got the old camera running.
Al says he has the camera running from inside so that he can photograph this also. There he goes.
Yeah, that may have been a small one for Neil, but that's a long one for me.
Pete says it's a small one for Neil, a long one for me.
Step off the pad, Mark. Off the, ooh, is that soft?
He stepped off.
Hey, that's neat.
Hey, that's neat.
I don't sink in too far.
If I don't sink in too far. He says that sun's bright, like someone shining a spotlight in you. I thought he said hand.
Well, I can walk pretty well. Now, but I gotta take it easy and watch what I'm doing. Boy, you'll never believe it. Guess what I see sitting on the side of the crater. It can't be any further than 600 feet from here.
He sees the surveyor and he
How
says it can't
that?
Be, couldn't be any farther than 600
well,
feet.
Again?
I say that was well planned, Pete.
Yeah, just a couple of months with a lot of people.
Let's see, deploy the LEC in a mesa, that's done. I'm looking at my mobility. Heat shift.
Going through his checklist.
I have the decided impression I don't want to move too rapidly.
I have the decided but impression I don't want to move too rapidly. I can walk quite well, he says.
That surveyor really is sitting on the side of a steep slope, I'll tell you that.
The surveyor on the side of a steep slope.
I'm going to work on my contingency sample.
Going to get the contingency sample. He's going right through his checklist and plan as prescribed.
Got to walk real careful, Al.
Got to walk real careful.
Can you see me all right? Not yet.
Al can't see him yet. Pete's first words were, hey, that's neat. If I don't sink in too far. The third man is on the moon. Pete Conrad walking around outside, adjusting himself, and enjoying every second of it.
As you might suspect from some of the pictures Neil brought back, gang, I'm going to be several small rocks sitting out in front of me that have a mound of dirt built up around them. I'm not sure that my descent engine didn't blow them there, but then again, it may not have.
He's describing rocks out in front of him, just as Neil saw when
Roger
he first stepped out.
That. Is the dirt built up on the side closest to the limb?
I'm going over to get my contingency sample, and I'll get one of the rocks in the sample. And, yeah, as a matter of fact, it is filled up on the side that the limb landed on. Let me get it. There's one scoop. There's another with some more rocks in it.
He's gathering that contingency sample. This will be placed.
And the dirt's just like the 160 airplane now.
Placed in his bag.
You can just chase it around. It's wild, I'll tell you. You know, the sun, it really is. It's just like somebody's got a super bright spotlight. Here's another good looking rock. Whoops.
He says the sun is like a super bright spotlight. He saw another good-looking rock. He's picking up several small stones, rocks for his contingency sample.
There's
he's going in a bag
I
in his pocket.
In
there's another rock I want to get in it, he says. Pete Conrad, during the first minutes of his exploration of the moon, it's been 19 minutes
about enough, don't you?
Since they depressurized.
One big rock, too pretty to pass up.
It's one big rock, too pretty
no,
to pass in.
No, that may not be a hog. Won't fit.
Won't fit
over here and get this other one, though. Oh, you sure lean forward, gee. They lean forward. I feel like I'm going to fall over in any direction. They're leaning about. Hey, Houston, one of the first things that I can see, by golly, is little glass beads. I got a piece about a quarter of an inch in sight, and I'm going to put it in a contingency sample bag. I can get it. I got it.
Glass beads in the rocks again. We've heard that before.
Am I really leaning over, Al? Sure are you. I know if you fall over, I believe. Huh? I know if you fall over leaning that far forward. That seems a little weird, I'll tell you. Don't think you're going to steam around here quite as fast as you thought you were. Tell you, your boots are digging in the soil quite a bit. And if you don't pick up your feet, you really kick up. A load of dirt ahead of you. Your left foot's got a big mound ahead of it right now. It's been pushing along.
Al's describing,
Uh-oh. Did I hear a tone?
2 feet, what
yeah,
he sees.
Yeah, I got an H2O. Hey. You do? Yeah, I wonder why. Hey, Houston?
Al, verify feed water's on.
You see, they're talking about the water in the water-cooled grommet.
It's been on.
If he hears a tone in his ear, that's...
It's still on.
That refers to one of the systems in his suit.
Boy, do I think in. Wow. Deep water's on. It's still real cool in here.
That's Al Bean's suit, apparently.
Al, diverter valve to minimum.
Al, diverter valve to minimum. They're
okay,
giving Al an instruction.
Do you think I may have done broken through the sublimator or something?
Al,
that's affirmative, Al.
You may have run the water in the sublimator, you see. Possible he broke the sublimator.
We have a good shot of you there, Pete.
Very good picture of Conrad coming into view.
Okay, well, I'm starting to take his baby apart. While I'm doing that...
He's reaching into the mesa and moving some of the...
It's just like Neil. I didn't dig any crater at all.
He didn't dig any crater when he landed. He took some of the mylar covering
Al,
off of the...
Al, you really got to watch your step down
yes, sir.
Here.
We can see him reaching right over the front of the camera. See his hand as he takes some of this insulation.
He's removing the thermal cover from the mesa.
This mesa, things that I've seen before.
And we presume Al Bean is working on that water cooling system in the space suit.
Didn't hardly smoke the gear at all, and it looked like we were... Looks like I landed just about vertical.
He says it looks like he landed just about vertical. The mesa has some give to it. It bounces just a little
like
when
Neil,
he
it was
lands on it.
You get on a little slope and you tend to keep on going.
Just as Neil says, when you get on a little slope, you keep on going when you move. A comment from Pete Conrad. Pete's obviously working on the... I think he's picking off the TV camera now, off the mesa. The whole mesa assembly is moving. He says he almost fell over.
Would you believe it? The mesa's too low for once.
The mesa is too low for once. So they strengthen the frame of the mesa so that...
Al, how
does
the feed water look now?
Question to Al on the feed water.
Well, it's still got an A in there, but I'm plenty cool. I went back to minimum, and I'm sitting here at minimum. What do you think happened?
You went back to
Al,
minimum
like
water
to watch
flow.
It, a bit. It could be instrumentation. Stand by.
I think it could be instrumentation causing the
okay.
warning tone. He went to minimum water flow, and he's still cool, meaning that there's enough water flowing through the liquid pool garment. We can see a glint of reflected light off of one of the legs of the lamp. It's covered in gold foil insulation to protect it. Whenever Pete touches the mesa, we can see the whole television camera jar.
I've been out, Houston.
He's asking how long he's been out.
Pete, you've been out 25 minutes, and you're about 4 minutes ahead.
He's been out 25 minutes, picking up time. He's 4 minutes ahead
okay.
of his schedule.
I got the table out. Dusted the mesa. I'm setting up the ATV at this time. Let's see, how is this packed? Very nice. Every night. Hey, Al, you can work out here all day. Just take your time.
He says he's opening up the mesa. He has
almost
got the...
Almost too cold on intermediate. I'm thinking seriously of going to Anna.
Pete's using plenty of water flow on intermediate. He's thinking of turning his water flow down to minimum. It's almost too cold, he says. He's going through the mesa procedures. He's put an equipment bag on the side of the mesa table.
Dum-da-dum-dum-dum. Right side out.
He's describing everything he does. He's letting us know what he's doing for sure.
I think our next big surprise, Al, is getting this thing up. Getting what up? The ETP? Or is that right? We'll see what happens.
Okay.
How's your water?
Oh, it still shows an A, but it's cool. It may be instrumentation.
I hope so. Just beginning to warm up to this task.
Pete says he's beginning to warm up to his task. Al says he believes his suit is still okay. He thinks it may be instrumentation giving a false alarm. Twenty-seven minutes now into this EVA period.
The water pump sounds like a diesel truck running out here. Comforting to know that it's running.
The water pump in his
fist.
The water pump in his portable life support system, he says, sounds like a diesel truck running out here.
Hey, I know what happened, Houston.
Al thinks he has a solution. He's waiting for Houston to acknowledge, I believe. You can see.
Go ahead.
What did you just do, Al?
Man, I just figured it out.
Sure did. You just blew water out the front of the cabin. That's what had happened to the cliff. But then the door swung shut like it did before and probably bothered the sublimator because it wasn't in a good vacuum anymore.
Uh-huh.
So I opened the door and it's probably going to start working in a minute.
Thank
I said
you.
Also, when you opened
the sublimator,
that ice ball.
Let's get Don to explain what's happening there.
I think what he's saying is that when the door popped partly closed again, the sublimator on his pliss wasn't operating correctly. It has to ice in order for it to work correctly. And it wasn't icing, and therefore he was getting that warning tone. Now when the door opened again, he was getting a good vacuum allowing his sublimator to ice.
Trying to be gentle.
Al, it's looking better.
So he's figured it out.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the hatch had closed quite so tightly like that. It just, when I was working on the other side of the cabin, the hatch went closed, and I didn't notice it. And apparently it's putting holding a good vacuum in here. My H2OA flag is off now, so everything's copacetic.
His H2.
Now let's go down here.
His water flag is off. This is a very sophisticated instrument, this sublimator made by the Hamilton Standard Company.
Both canisters now, both batteries. As soon as I get them in here, I gotta pack the contingency sample. Okay. Sit tight, wait for a bit. Okay. I tell you, you really can't move as fast as I thought you could.
Pete's right in view of the camera. He has the bag. He has this bag type device that's with a long handle that's used to pick up rocks in his hand. We can see him in the television picture. There comes Al. Nope, that's the equipment clothesline. That thing drops right into the picture, right down the line of the ladder, and it almost looks as though somebody might be on the ladder. Pete moves it as he's working at the edge of the mesa table. We can see Pete Conrad in color.
Did I get dirt all over myself?
He says he's got to be careful. He'll get dirt all over himself. He's working. He's putting the contingency sample in a bag. He had it in a pocket on his spacesuit. He's now putting it in a bag, and then he will put it in one of the rock boxes.
This is what is known as dirt.